and purposeful leadership. So if this is not where you meant to be,
we're sorry.
Congratulations.
But you can stay.
Stay. Or leave now. We won't be offended, but we will be offended if you leave in 20 minutes. Then that tells us a different message. But we are glad you're here. I'm going to open us up in prayer and do a couple introductions, and then we will jump right in. Jesus, we thank you for today. Lord, we just thank you for the opportunity that you give us, Lord, just to become better followers of yours, more faithful in the gifts and abilities that you've given us. And Lord, we just pray right now that as we gather together for this time, that you will sit in our midst, that you will speak to our hearts, that you will challenge us. And Father, as we leave this place, we will know that you have equipped us to accomplish the things that you've called us to. And God, we promise that every step of the way, you will receive the glory in our lives. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Well, we are glad you're here. I'm just going to take a second to introduce who we are to you. My name is Lindley, and I am the lead pastor along with Chris over here, my other half. We serve as the lead pastors at Harvester. We have been there now for a year. We came to V16 last year, and we had just moved in literally like 4 days before V16. And so this is kind of cool for us. It's a little bit of a, kind of like a birthday for us. So we're glad to be here and really excited about just sharing some practical tools with you. Some of the feedback that we've received from workshops from last year was the desire that many people had to attend workshops that provided practical tools. So not just information, but practicality. And so that's what this is, this whole workshop is centered on. We're just going to have a conversation here on stage, and hopefully you will pick up something from that. And with us is our counterpart, Jeremiah Wood. Jeremiah serves as one of the pastors at J.C. Nass in Junction City, and a very catalytic leader. And Jeremiah's, throughout his ministry, he is responsible for helping to plant over a dozen churches, knows a lot about raising up leaders, building teams. By the way, I'll just give a quick plug. Right after this, in this room, Jeremiah is leading a workshop called Building Teams. So maybe you're here today and you lead a ministry, or you're a pastor that wants to know, how do I build strong teams of lay leaders, of core leaders in my church? And last year, again, in our feedback, that was the number one workshop that people asked and recommended that we would have this year. So I told Jeremiah, no pressure, brother. So he's going to do that. You will learn so much. So I encourage you to stay for that. But we're going to talk today about practical leadership. And what are the practices of leadership? And what does it mean to be purposeful in our leadership? Because the reality is that we believe, and you guys might not even see, maybe you can see that, if the guys, but here's the thing, everything that we do has to have a plan. It has to have an aim, and it has to have a goal. Whatever kind of leader you are here today, and by the way, we believe that if you are a follower of Christ, you have been called to be a leader. In whatever capacity that is, it's going to take a lot of different shapes from people here in this room. But if you are a believer, God has equipped you with a specific ability that he intends for you to lead with. And so we have aims and we have goals in our abilities that helps us to be better leaders. You know the great saying, right? If we fail to plan, right, we plan to fail, right? And so being purposeful about leadership is saying that I am going to develop a capacity within myself to lead in my strengths to the best of my ability. And we see that in the life of Daniel. Daniel, it says, he purposed in his heart not to defile God. He purposed something within his heart that led him throughout his life to pursue and follow after God. So when we talk about purpose, to purpose means to determine or to resolve. So it means that even you may be here today and you may say, I really don't feel like a leader. But purposeful leadership says, even though I may not feel yet like I am a leader, I'm going to be determined, I'm going to be resolved to develop within me the ability to lead in whatever capacity it is that God is calling me to lead. In leadership, people have to be purposeful and determined to achieve their goals. So if I were to ask you, and if you're writing down, if you have a paper that you're writing on, here's what I want to ask you to write down right now, because this will provide a framework for what we're talking about in purposeful leadership. If you could identify one area right now that you feel like God would be pleased if you would lead in this area, what would it be? Just take a minute and write that down. If you can think of one gift or ability that you have, that you believe that if you would develop your abilities in that one area, and if you would purpose in your heart that you're going to lead in that area, even though you might not yet feel equipped, what do you feel like is the one area where God would be pleased if you would lead? Some of you may say children's ministry. Some of you may say being a greeter and welcoming new people into my church. Somebody else might say serving in my community or leading a life group. Whatever that might be, where do you feel like God would be pleased for you to lead and develop your capacity to lead? And as we talk today, be thinking about what's being said within the framework of what you've written down. So we're going to dive into this and let the guys share some thoughts here. And we're going to talk today about the 10 best practices of purposeful leadership. Because we know this, leaders don't happen by chance. You don't just one day wake up and say, now I'm a great leader, right? Leadership happens with intentionality. Leadership happens as every day we wake up with a determination that we're going to improve ourselves, that we're going to grow in our capacity to lead. We're going to be purposeful about that and not just leave it up to chance, because we know what happens when we leave things up to chance, right? One of two things. Either it doesn't go the way that we wanted it to, or it just doesn't happen at all. And so today we're going to talk about what does it mean to be a leader that is purposeful about developing their abilities and their skills and leading in the way that God would have them. So the first practice that we're going to unpack today is this. This is the foundation for Christian leadership, which is this. A bulletproof devotional routine. Purposeful leaders stay close to the Lord. And so I'm just going to kick it off to these guys, and we're just going to talk about what this looks like. So for the two of you, what does this look like in your own leadership? How do you see this as the foundation of everything that you do as a leader? How important is this?
You're up. All right, I'm up. It's so important. Obviously, if we're not strong in our personal relationship with Christ, obviously, and in the pastoral world, you know, our flock will suffer. If we're not strong in our spiritual lives, our families will suffer. So there's so many different ways that this can play down. And so being intentional in our spiritual lives and really developing that, I think, is key. But also having a plan for that. What does that look like? Sometimes I know for myself, it's happened where I just grab the Bible and open up the Bible and go, okay, I'm going to read today. You know, and that's good. It's always good. The Lord can speak in that. But just having intentionality to really seek out what the Lord wants for me personally in my growth. And so one of the things that we try to take the time to do at least every year, if not every 6 months, is take a prayer retreat. Just an intentional time that we get away, take a personal prayer retreat, and just spend time in prayer, just really seeking out what the Lord would have for me for this next year. Spiritually, some goal setting things, but really just intentionally doing that and seeking Him out now, just to hear His voice.
Yeah, that's really good. I was in a place one time, just not being too long back, a year or so ago, and I just really felt like maybe my relationship, you know, with the Lord wasn't as vibrant or proactive as I wanted it to be. And I remember asking the Lord, how do I get closer to You? You know, how do I get closer in relationship to You? And He began to unfold this like cycle that every relationship goes through. And the first part of the cycle is inquiry. Like every relationship, every good and close relationship always starts out with questions, right? And He said, ask Me anything. I was like, okay. Because what I realized what I was doing in my prayer life, all I was doing was talking. Lord, please do this. Lord, please do that. Lord, please bless them. Please bless them. And I was just doing all this talking in my prayer life, and it wasn't really fueling anything. He says, ask me questions so I can give you answers. And so the cycle started with inquiry, and I started asking God all these different questions, and questions automatically turn into conversations. And conversations then turn into understanding, and understanding then grows into greater affection. And so if you want to have a greater relationship with me, is what he told me. He said, if you want to have a greater relationship with me, then ask greater questions. If you want to have a greater relationship with me, then let's have greater conversations. If you want to have a greater relationship with me, let those conversations lead to greater understanding. And he said, then let those understandings lead to a greater affection. And so what ended up happening in my life is I stopped praying for stuff. And if I had stuff to pray about, I started quoting scripture, like, you know everything I need even before I ask, and it calms my spirit, you know, and you know, you will provide all of my needs according to your riches and glory, and I could just, like, blanket all my requests under those, and then it's like, okay, question. And so let me give you a practical sense. I was talking with another Nazarene minister last March, and he was saying how part of his ministry, he kind of lives in more of a pagan area of our country, and he says there's a lot of deliverance that has to go on in our ministry, so we're praying demons out of people, and I'm like, wow. And so I go into my prayer time, question, like, how do you do that, God? Like, how am I supposed to, you know, lead people in deliverance? And I ask a question, and we begin to have a conversation. It grew to an understanding. I had greater affection, and that's kind of how it rolls.
So if you're writing this down, write that down. That is powerful. It's it starts with question, and then it starts with conversation, and then it starts with
understanding,
and then affection. If you're a pastor, I mean, that's like a 4-point sermon right there, right? But I hope what you hear in this as well is we're giving you 10 best practices of leadership, but this first one especially, this is just the best practice of a believer. Is that the very first thing we do is develop our relationship with the Lord. One thing that we talk about in trainings that we all have done through DCPI Dynamic Church Planting International, we talk about the different types of leaders. And we specifically talk about the most dangerous leader. And do you know what the most dangerous leader out there is? The one that's spiritually immature. Because that's the one that's leading in their own strength. That's the one that's trying to figure things out on their own and what they desire and how they think things should be done. And so as leaders, we have got to embrace the reality that we are who we are. We are leaders, and we are effective only as much as we are connected to God. And so remembering that to be a purposeful leader first begins with our own intentionality to grow spiritually. And the next practice we're going to jump into is this one. Purposeful leadership maintains a great marriage and a healthy personal, and I should put and or, because I recognize that there are some in here that aren't married, that might be single or might be still in junior high or high school, and so we certainly hope you're not married yet. Maintain a great marriage and or a personal life. Purposeful leaders begin their leadership with their efforts at home and in their interpersonal relationships. So guys, speak to that. What does that look like for you? And since we're married, I'm hoping you're going to have a really great... I mean, it shouldn't take too long for you to answer this, right?
You can throw in whatever you want after. No, I think as, again, I kind of come back to, if we can't lead in our families, you know, what makes us think we can lead anywhere else? And for us in our marriage and at home, leading together is important. But being intentional, you know, life gets busy for all of us. No matter what line of work we're in, what we do, if we're in ministry, if we're not, things get busy. And a lot of times, the last thing that gets attention are our relationships with our families and our relationships with our spouses. Honestly, I mean, we kind of get the scraps, if you will. And so how can we be intentional about you know, keeping our relationships strong with each other. And I know that for us, being a church planting couple, when we planted down in Texas, that was a huge challenge. We moved down to Texas to plant together with our two boys, and we were both lead pastors together. And so we're together a lot. We were together all the time, and we still are a lot. But you were in church planting mode. You were in ministry mode. And so we had to be really intentional about not allowing ministry to overly consume time that we would take with each other, and being intentional about doing that. And so for us, it was calendaring out, and still is, exactly when we were going to have a family fun night, and exactly when it was going to be when we had date nights, and intentionally making sure that those were on the calendar. Because if we didn't do that, it wasn't going to happen. So, you know, sure, there's those spur of the moment kinds of things that happen, but being intentional about doing that and calendaring those things in, because otherwise it's going to take a toll.
And Jeremiah, I just want to give a framework for you as you talk about family. So Jeremiah has adopted, is it three or four now?
Three.
Three babies under the age of?
They're two, three, and four.
Two, three, and four. Okay, wow. So he expanded his family and fairly quickly. I mean, it really did. And so you talk about going from a family of three to a family of seven in fairly a short amount of time. And so how do you, I mean, that in and of itself is just chaotic by nature.
Sure.
Just of what that dynamics there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how do you find that balance?
I think a lot of it had to do with conviction. And I think that especially in a ministry role, the nature of ministry is, you know, the people need you, right? And the conviction I came to was, no matter how much ministry needs me, my family needs me more. And so they literally deserve the best of me. And so they deserve my best hours, and they deserve my best time, and they deserve my best attitudes. And so I can very easily, even if I'm feeling sick, and I can be with church people, I can put on the happy face, but can I put that same happy face on with my family? And so, you know, my kids are really pretty easy as far as all they want to do is wrestle. So I can come home and I can put on a happy face and just kind of throw them around a little bit, and then everybody's good. And then it turns out to like 2 hours of wrestling, and we're still going. And my wife's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm winning." And but with my wife is a difference. Well, actually, here's, because I have three babies, two, three, and four, and then I have a 13-year-old daughter. And then on top of that, my wife and I, and so we, it's just choosing to give the best of us. And so we had a really big tragedy this week. One of my daughter's friends in the youth group passed away in a car accident on Thursday morning. And so she was obviously distraught about it. She was very torn up. And I'm sitting down in the front room. This is about 7 o'clock on Thursday night. I'm sitting down in the front room. I have a break. I have a counseling session at like 8:30. That I got a Skype with. So I had about this hour and a half time, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I can get this work done that I'm a little behind on because this week's been crazy. And I sit down and I start doing some work on my computer, and my daughter comes in, and she says, "Hey, is this grandma's number?" And I said, no, here's grandma's number. And she said, I said, "What are you gonna call grandma for?" She's like, "I'm just gonna talk to her about my day." And she goes downstairs. I'm like, why is she calling my grandma to talk about a day? Why does she talk to her parents? And I'm on my computer, and I just feel the Holy Spirit say, "Because you're not available, dummy." And so I put my computer down, and I call her back upstairs. Grandma didn't answer. Just for grace, right? Second chances. And, you know, she sat on my lap for that next hour and a half, and we just kind of processed. And it's something that doesn't really come easy for me. But choosing to give your family the best of you is really the best decision.
So another one is this, and this is a tough one, I think, for anyone that's trying to develop themselves as a leader, and their skills and abilities was this, is cultivate relationships with people who are 100% honest. So do you have anybody like that in your life that is 100% honest with you? So what does that look like for you? Purposeful leaders want to hear truth spoken into their lives. And so unpack that a little bit as far as what does that look like in your leadership?
One of the things I kind of think about in having someone that, you know, we all have those people, I think, that I always call them yes people, that we may talk to, that we know they're going to back just about whatever we say. but it is difficult to find those 100% people that are honest with you. And so, you know, how do you go about doing that? You do have some of those people that maybe are candor with you, but really don't want them to be candor with you.
I was just thinking that. That's so
I think it's a fine balance, you know, maybe reaching outside of your family sometimes to make that happen or to do that. But I think that in the context of pastoral roles, that we have people that we've found that are honest with us, you know, about certain things, and we can be able to take it.
I think the key is the first two words, cultivate relationships. It's building relationships with people where there's a sense of trust and there's that sense of community that you have with them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's true because it's best to have that with people that you know love you.
Yeah.
Because people can actually use honesty to harm you, or those who love you use honesty to better you. And the ones that love you the most will always use honesty, even if it doesn't come out very kindly. Like my wife, she's 100% honest with me. Like, hurts my feelings every time because she's not the most gentle person. I mean, with me anyway. She's like, I told her something the other day, and she's like, oh, that's so stupid. She's like, this is the cheesiest thing I've ever heard in my life. She's like, please don't ever say that again. She's like, no, okay, good. So I cried a little bit, and that's fine. So no, not really. But then I got three other guys, you know, that are in my life and that are roughly in the same position that I am in ministry and kind of real similar to age groups. And we have this openness that we're allowed to be 100%. We see something in our lives. And I remember praying through a transition one time and really not... At the time, I didn't have the courage enough, you know, to pull the trigger and take the leap that I was supposed to take. And my buddy was just like, listen, if you don't do this, you will regret it. It'll be the worst decision you'll ever make, and you'll just continue to live your life as sad as you are now. And I'm like, you're right. I didn't hurt my feelings, but he was just honest. And so making sure that the people that you allow to be honest with you are ones that love you and want to be honest for your benefit.
And just to add to that, you probably heard this phrase before, perception is reality, right? Like whatever I perceive as truth is really my reality, even if it's not truth. And the people that we're talking about are those people that invade your reality. They say, you may perceive this as truth, but this is what's really going on. And again, it's centered around relationship. Next one is this, build relationships with leaders who are one or two steps ahead of you. So looking at it in just a different aspect of relationships that you cultivate, purposeful leaders spend meaningful time with people who give them energy. And so I'll tell you about one that I like to be around him because when I leave his presence, I just want to be better. He was the DS for the Joplin District. We all know him. And he's a mentor to all of us, Mark Bain. He just makes me want to go and charge the world for Jesus. Right. He energizes me. If I feel like I'm faced with a task that I can't do, I'll just text Mark. And before too long, he has built me up. He just energizes me. He's just a powerful leader, but he's a very catalytic and energetic leader. And so surrounding ourselves with people who energize us, people who are a few steps ahead of us. So in your context, whether that's pastoral leadership or that's just Christian leadership, Who are some people in your life? Maybe even just jot down some people that you can think of that when you think of somebody that maybe is a few steps ahead of you in their relationship with Christ, that you want to build a bridge with them, that you want to grow a relationship. So guys, how do you do that as well? Just building relationships with people who are a few steps ahead. Yeah, just want you.
Yeah, so DCPI, we have this mentoring philosophy that says, you know, find a person who has been where you want to go and let them help you get there. I mean, they've already navigated those waters. And for me, you know, 3 years ago, I'd never planted a church before. I'd never thought about planting a church before. I didn't know anything about it. But I was able to connect with a guy named Dan Broughton. And Dan Broughton is like king of church plants in our camp. And so Dan was able to lead me through the rough and messy waters at his church planting, because that's where I wanted to go. And so if you're wanting to go someplace, find someone who's been there and can lead you in that direction.
Well, I think about, you know, when I was in the corporate world, it was kind of another example of just, you know, when I wanted to, for me, I was a mortgage loan specialist. And so I wanted to be the top dog, but I wasn't the top dog. I reached out to a couple of the guys that I knew were heavy hitters. And, you know, sometimes in that role, it's a little bit more cutthroat. So people may not be as likely to help, you know, share kind of how they got where they've gotten. But, you know, the answer is always no until you ask the question. And so ask the question, you know, in our current roles, you know, we were church planters, and then now we moved here to Harvester and to a existing church, but I've reached out to a couple friends of mine, but another gentleman that was a church planter about the same time frame I was, and went to an existing church and has seen some really great success there as far as just being able to move the church and ministries doing well there, and just reached out to him and just said, hey, you know, what'd you do first? What would you do differently? You know, what were your biggest mistakes and what were your biggest successes over your first year or your first 2 years? And it really helped me just kind of open my mind up and really intentionally look ahead at what might be there to lead better.
That's good. I think this is the next one is probably one of the ones that a lot of us in here face, the challenge of this, to pass the baton. Leaders learn how to pass the baton to other people. Purposeful leaders share the load. And so I want you guys to unpack, before we jump into what that really looks like, what are some dangers that you have seen of not passing the baton and what that has looked like? How is that, how it's been damaging in your, maybe your leadership, or you've seen an example of it?
I think in my scenarios, it's been some of the other leaders that I've worked with that didn't pass the baton. One, you know, the whatever it is that you're leading only goes as high as that leader, right? And in reality, what ends up happening when it only goes so high, then it becomes stifling, because the how do I say it? So like the program or whatever it is that you are trying to lead, if it can only ever go higher than you, then what happens is the program itself naturally wants to keep going. The program naturally wants to go higher and higher and higher and higher. It's just the essence of whatever it is we're doing. It could be an organization, it could be a church, it could be a class, it could be a VBS, whatever. It naturally wants to grow. But if it can only grow as high as the one leader, then it'll only ever stifle and die out. And I think that's the biggest thing that I think is the biggest negative from it.
That's good.
Well, and obviously I think that you can experience burnout in maybe a particular area that, and not, you know, serving in a specific area like in the church in particular is not a bad thing. Consistency is great. But I think sometimes you get to that point where, you know, you're doing it over and over and over, and you're doing it a certain way over and over and over. But if you don't pass the baton and allow, you know, others to help, to come alongside and bring them up, you're maybe going to experience burnout. the success of the ministry is obviously going to be hampered.
And I think this is the essence of discipleship. Look at the life of Jesus. What did Jesus do? He brought the disciples alongside him. He modeled for them what it was that they were to do, and then what did he do? He passed the baton. And he said, now you go do it. And what I love about it is, and this always just blows my mind, that Jesus said, you will do even greater things.
Yes.
That's incredible to me. Can we as leaders say that to people that we're pouring our lives into? To say, I'm going to show you how to do this, but guess what? I want to do such a great job of that, you're going to do better than I ever could. And that's fundamentally the gospel being breathed into leadership concepts, which is to pass that on, to build up other people.
I was just going to think, I mean, obviously Jesus modeled with the 12 disciples. He said, go, right? Go out and make disciples. But I think about, unfortunately, we're not real great at this whole passing the baton thing. If we're really honest, as a church, you know, because I think that we get vested in ministry, or we get vested in something, and we get comfortable in it, and we like it, right? We like the way it looks, the way it is, the people that we're involved with. And so I think it takes us to die to ourselves in a lot of respects, to recognize that there is a leader that may be right there, right next to us, that if we would be able to step away and allow them to come up, there'd be new life that was infused in that ministry because we stepped away from it and we're able to train them up and bring them up. And I think if we look ahead, if we can look at from the standpoint of saying maybe we're taking over a new ministry or starting something new, but then also to say, who am I going to bring alongside with me? With anything that I do in any ministry, that in any of our churches, if we're able to say, who's going to be alongside me? Never do anything alone. So that we always have someone else to bring up alongside with us to be able to send out or to take over that ministry at some point. I think we'd be so much more effective leaders and more effective ministry.
And I just want to give a plug here, maybe because this is the language that we all speak and know and love and believe in. But in terms of reproduction, I'll just pose this question to you as individuals, but to us as a church. And I think that it's easier sometimes for us to pass the baton, even though it is difficult. It's easier for us to do that on an individualistic level than oftentimes it is on a corporate level. Here's what I mean by that. If we were to look at this within the framework of the church and ask the question, how are we passing the baton? How are we continuing to go out, to raise up leaders that they can then become leaders? How are we doing that? And I'll just give a little, my personal, and I think it's a biblical answer, is this, that it's through the planting of churches. As a church, the question is, how are we passing the baton? Do we just create a community of people that we say, we've got it right here. And boy, if people want to come to us, that's great, but we've just got it right here. Or as a church, are we saying, we're going to pass the baton on and on and on and on. So we're going to raise up leaders that then we're going to send out to go and do what's happening in our midst and experience God's presence, but we're going to send them out to grow that and build that somewhere else. I think probably one of the greatest things that I've ever heard by one of my mentors. We were talking one time, and she said this. She said, her name is Kathy Becker. She's actually heard her husband founded DCPI that you've heard us talk about. Here's what she said. She said, I absolutely refuse to do anything in my life that doesn't reproduce. And she was talking a lot about her faith. She said, if I'm going to meet with somebody to talk about my faith, if I'm going to mentor somebody, it's going to reproduce. And so what she was saying is, if I'm going to pour my life into you, I expect for you to pour your life into somebody else, who will then pour their life into somebody else. And so here's what I would say in that, for pastors, here's what I think that we should say. I refuse to lead any church and to shepherd any church in such a way that they don't reproduce. That's going to be our language, because that's the language of the gospel. That's the language of Jesus. as he was modeling that and telling his disciples, go out now and make more disciples and make more disciples. That's how the gospel is furthered. So well, passing the baton is not just passing on duties. Like sometimes we pass the baton and we say, okay, these are the things I don't want to do, so I'll give that to those people and they can do it, right? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about passing the baton in such a way that you are raising up leaders that can continue to lead in their strengths as well. Here's one that I think is probably of the 10, one of the most crucial, which is this: remain accountable. Purposeful leaders seek mentors and coaches who will ask the tough questions. So we've already talked about those people that invade our reality, that are 100% honest with us, that have gone where we want to go. But accountability, we're going to jump into this and dig deeper into what this looks like. Accountability as leaders. Whether you are a lay leader, whether you are a pastoral leader, a Christian leader in your workplace, in your school, in your community, this concept is crucial, which is to remain accountable. So guys, unpack this just a little bit about what does that exactly look like in your ministry?
Well, there are two types of accountability that we talked about earlier. One's a personal accountability. To make sure that you're maintaining a level of holiness that God expects for each person, but more specifically that God expects for leaders. But then there's also a professional accountability, and that kind of accountability holds you accountable to maybe your attitudes and your motivation. And for me, it's real easy to have people accountable for my personal life and for my life of holiness. But I also wanted to surround my life with people who could hold me accountable to my professional life. And they could look at me, and if I wasn't meeting standards or working up to par, they could say, listen, you're just making excuses to be lazy. You know what I mean? Or to hold me accountable in a way that, if I'm being overbearing or I'm being too mean and I'm saying, well, we got to get the project done, we got to meet this deadline. Like, listen, no, you're just using that as an excuse to, be negative and to be mean in your situation. So if you're going to be a leader who is really impacting, being impactful in whatever ministry that you are a part of, whatever class or group or project that you're leading, it's good to have people in your life who can say, you're micromanaging and you need to let up. Or who to say, you really need to take charge, step up, and deal with this problem because you're kind of being a coward right now. And holding you accountable professionally in your ministry to be the best you that you can be.
I think that it obviously takes kind of a change of heart or change of mentality to be self-aware, to be okay with someone speaking that into your life and opening yourself up to that. I think we can all be on the defensive rather than accepting those things. So, really seeking out who that is in your life that can really do that for you from mentoring or from a coaching standpoint. I know we have some younger, some high school age individuals in the house today. And I would say it starts young. Finding mentors and finding people in your life that can really speak life into who you are and being okay with some hard answers and accepting that and growing in that as young leaders and growth in that.
And I'll just add to that, it was actually probably to me one of the most formative, but the process was just labor intensive. When we planted, part of the process was that we had to go through a very formal and intensive assessment. Psychological, financial, relational. You fill out all kinds of questionnaires and then you spend a weekend in a room full of people where you're placed in a scenario where you have to work through different problems and issues and your personalities rise up, and around the room are assessors with clipboards writing down stuff about you. What they're trying to discover truly is what are your personality, who emerges as the leader in this room, who's overbearing. And then you get in front of this panel of assessors that then says, here's what we discovered. I have to tell you, that was so formative for me as a leader, because I appreciate sitting down with Roy Rogers, DS in Georgia, and I appreciate him sitting down and going over things, positive things. But then there were some things that he said, you need to be careful, because here's what I see, and if you're not careful on this, you're going to hurt people. And I was so thankful for that. So I think attitude is huge. To be accountable means that I have an attitude that says, I want you to speak into my life because it's the only way that I can grow as a leader. And again, you choose who that is that's speaking into your life, people who are qualified to do that, but you allow them to do that. Chris and I have actually put ourselves through two assessments in the last 5 years. We've been through two formal assessments, one that was for church planning, but another that we voluntarily participated in because we just wanted to know more. Maybe we should do it again. They're fun. They really, truthfully, I tell you, if you've never gone through any kind of process like that, even if you were to do this, if this is all that you were to do to begin the process of self-awareness, I highly recommend start with StrengthsFinder 2.0. Find out StrengthsFinder 2.0. Find out what your strengths are. But then I would really challenge you then to take those strengths and look at them and begin to investigate how am I as a leader? What are the strengths that I have? But then after that, I would challenge you in StrengthsFinder, there's all kinds of different strengths that it talks about. And it gives you like your top, five, but then I think it goes even further than that. But then start looking at the other strengths and asking yourself, where am I not strong? And then I would encourage you to do this. Go to somebody that you trust and say, here's my top five, but what do you think are my bottom five? Your top five are great, but you need to know what your bottom five are. Somebody that you trust and ask them, and then begin to reflect on that and see what God will do. I guarantee you God will begin to change the way that you see yourself in a good light. Yeah,
just real quick, and the reason why this whole idea of accountability is so important. My dad and I were talking about this in the car ride over here in the 7.5 very rainy, stormy car ride. But the reason accountability in this situation is so important is because it's really not your failures and your lacks that are going to kill you. It's going to be your successes if they go unchecked. Mm-hmm. Because the more successful you become, the more successful your ministries are, the more you are at risk of being puffed up, and the more puffed up you become, the more at risk you are of really being led to an ultimate failure. And we talked about this earlier at the table. You don't want to become the untouchable leader. You don't want to be that. You don't want to be the guy or the gal who says, I have all the answers. I'm the one with all the success. You can't say anything to me because I'm this good. You don't want to be that person. You want to be the person who, no matter what your success is, no matter what your failures, that you are able to receive the critiques and the feedback in order to be able to lead as God has called you to lead.
That's powerful. That's good. What about this one? Guys, speaking of this, have exceptional clarity around how and when to say no. Purposeful leaders have laser vision for the task that they are called to fulfill. So speak into that a little bit of what that looks like. In your ministry, as you've grown as a leader.
How many of us like to say no to things?
I do.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
I do.
You know, I think that's one of the biggest things that when I look at the church context and for recruitment of leaders or recruitment of volunteers, you know, how are we recruiting our volunteers? Is it because they're going to serve in their giftings, or is it because we're desperate and so we guilt them into it, right? And so I know that happens in our lives also, and that maybe it's not guilt, but it's those things that, you know what, we know that we can do them, so okay, yes, we'll go ahead and do it. Yeah, I'll do that. Rather than deciphering, you know, what's the best use of my time? Because I could say yes to 1,000 things, and I could probably do them all, but how well am I going to do them all? And so I think that, because it eats away little by little, at how effective that we can be as leaders. And so does it line up with who we are, how God made us, what the overall plan is maybe for our church, the vision of our church, and what we're doing.
That's good. And let me just ask, in here, how many of you lead some kind of team in your church? Or you are a part of leadership in your church? Okay. Here's a question that I would ask of those that lead teams or are part of leadership. Oftentimes, we create environments where it's not okay to say no. And so when we ask somebody to do something, if they say no, maybe even just inside we think to ourselves, really, how could you say no? You know this needs to be done, right? I mean, let's just be honest. That's the attitude that we have. And so one of the questions that we have to ask ourselves if we're leading teams is, am I okay when people say no? Is there an environment where people can say no? Now, there's an argument to that. I would say, babe, but we should encourage people to say yes, right? We should encourage people to get involved. And that's a whole different aspect, and stay for building teams, because Jeremiah will teach you how to get people to want to say yes to serve in their gifts and abilities. But just ask yourself that question. Is there an environment in our church where it's okay for people to say no if they truly feel like this is not where God wants them to lead him? So creating that environment. Here's something I just quote you've probably heard before. Good is the enemy of great. Good is the enemy of great. I can do a lot of good things, but what are the great things that God's called me to? And knowing that if I say yes to something, there is always something I'm saying no to. And Jeremiah hit on that just a little bit earlier. If he said yes to work, he said no to his daughter needing to have a conversation. If I say yes to another meeting this week, I'm saying no, then I have to say no to something else. And usually that's going to be family time or whatever that might be. So to every yes, there's always a no. So just thinking about those things. Let's jump to this one. A diversified learning menu. Purposeful leaders seek to learn from a variety of voices, including those outside of their tribe. I'll never forget General Superintendent Jerry Porter. I was in we were just in a breakout session with him about a year ago in Florida, Exponential. I think you, were you there, Jeremiah? You weren't there. Yeah, and then we weren't there this year. Jerry Porter said this, and it has stuck with me. I wrote it down in my journal because I thought it was so powerful. He said, leaders, I want you to hear me. He said, we are arrogant if we feel like we can't learn from other tribes and other leaders that are doing things that we want to do. Man, that just hit me between the eyes. So I was like, if I'm not doing that, then there's a spirit of arrogance. There's a spirit of, and Jeremiah said it earlier, of I'm untouchable. I know it all. The greatest leader knows that they don't know it all. And so learning from a diversified menu. Guys, I'm going to jump to another one unless you've got any questions.
No, I was just going to, the only thing I was going to say is there's just a lot of great resources out there.
Yeah.
There's so many resources now. I mean, we're so much more blessed as a community to be able to find those resources online and everywhere. And so I would say check it out.
Stop by the Leadership Development Table. There's a lot of handouts there about conferences, free resources online, blogs, go to the YouTube channels and find somebody, books that you can read, resource yourself. That's the beautiful thing about the internet, lots of free resources.
I just wanted to say real quick that my worship leader told me this week that she was at a conference and Gloria Gaither was there. You guys know Gloria Gaither? And Gloria Gaither said, you will never write a good song if you only ever listen to Christian music.
Powerful. So true. I know everybody, I did too. I went, that's it. Powerful. Regularly scheduled work on a time. Purposeful leaders budget significant time towards moving the vision and the mission forward. And so guys, I'm going to ask you to unpack this just a little bit about what does that look like to dedicate time to the things that are really going to move the mission that God's called you to accomplish, that vision that God's given you.
One of the things that I mentioned earlier, first about personal walk, a planned prayer retreat. I think it's so important, the intentionality in a prayer retreat for you as a person, but maybe your ministry that you're involved in, maybe the church that you're leading, but taking the intentional time to get away with God, to allow Him to speak to you directly in real and new ways, I think is so important. We just don't do that enough. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that you can do. Even if it's just for a whole Saturday to go to a state park somewhere and just get away and let Him breathe into us and allow Him to breathe fresh vision into us so that we can be what we need to be.
One of the things, Lindley asked a question to us earlier. She said, what's the number one thing that keeps you from being able to budget out your time? And for me, it was, at one point in time, we had set it up where the atmosphere of our teams, where the team was so codependent upon me as a leader that they didn't feel like they could do anything without addressing me first. So I would shut my door, and I would be working on a message, or I'd be working on a project, and I did not need to be disturbed, and hey, I know we're having a pizza lunch today. Did you want me to order those pizzas? Is it okay to order? I said, yeah, you can order pizza. Hey, so-and-so called. Do you want me to call them back? Yes, you could call them back. And so when you create an environment where people are codependent upon you as a leader, it is a time drainer. So do not allow your teams. This is why we empower our teams. We empower our teams so they're not codependent on us.
One thing to key in off of that, which will help, I think, just for our churches, Andy Stanley always says vision leaks. And so, I mean, if you have cast a vision to your church one time, that's not enough. Because vision leaks. And so we forget what we're doing and why we're doing. And so the intentionality behind doing vision series and doing vision castings within small groups, within your ministries, within your church as a whole, at least twice a year. And then also by doing that, you're also refreshing that vision within your heart. And maybe the Lord's going to continue to reveal more of His vision that He has for your churches. And so I just think, just remember, vision leaks, it leaks, it leaks, it leaks. We need to remind our people of what we're here for, why we're doing it, and how they can be a part of it.
Just to add to that, and then we're going to do one final one and leave just a couple of minutes for some question and answer time. I think it's important also to, especially even for lay leadership in this, is God has given you a vision for your ministry, for your ability that you are leading in, whatever that might be. And so it's important to also develop that time where you are moving the mission and the vision forward. The greatest blessing to a pastor is a lay leader that says this: Pastor, I feel like God has called me to do this, and I'm going to now go do it. Here's what normally happens. Pastor, I feel that God is telling me that we should do this. How are you going to make it happen, Pastor?
My angels just talked about the week.
Yeah.
Confusing.
And so the reality is, that's exactly right. The we, but it's really me. God has given you a vision and a mission. When He gives that to you, and it does, and I don't believe God confuses vision in His church. I don't believe that if God has given your pastor and your leader a vision for His church, that God's ever going to give you something that's counter to that if you were a part of that body. Mm-hmm. I don't believe God operates. I know He doesn't operate in that way. But if the vision that God is giving you and your pastor, is those come in alignment, then it's not, Pastor, you need to make this happen, but it's, Pastor, God has given this to me, so I'm going to spend the time I need to help that vision become a reality for our church as a body, as a whole. So now I'm going to ask you a quick question. The last one is, a purposeful leader finds a body that takes your hobby, not a body, finds a hobby that takes your mind off things. Purposeful leaders know when to turn things off. So guys, what's your hobby?
Baby wrangling.
Baby wrangling.
I like to bike and hike and backpack.
And I'll just add this, and we're going to do some Q&A time. Briefly, but you guys talked about how hobbies also can help you to accomplish what God's calling you to do. So get out into your community. If you love biking or hiking, how can God use that to help you use your hobby to connect to other people? Don't forget this one. I don't want to sidestep this one. Purposeful leadership is also taking care of yourself and taking time to just, there's times when Chris and I will go, we need to turn it off. And we know what we mean. It's just time to walk away. So just a couple of minutes, but any pressing questions, something that you've heard today that sparked a question within you, you just want to ask real quickly. About anything.
I had one question. On the first one, you said to develop a bulletproof devotional routine. And on the last part of it, on your note, you said put scripture on problems, pray, asking God, question, conversation, and there's two more that I missed. Can you fill in my blanks
sure.
from here?
Yeah,
please?
Yeah.
It's questions, conversation, mm-hmm. understanding.
Affection. Understanding and affection.
Affection, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How do you say no?
No.
Because, I mean, it's easy to say no, but then, and then you're focused on your family right now, okay? This is our family time, and then a pressing need comes, and you have to do that. Or you're helping somebody at church, and your family needs you. And I told my friend here, that's one of my weaknesses is trying to stay focused on one thing when you really, the other need is very pressing.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
One of the things, and this may not be what you're looking for, but I think clear expectations and clear boundaries up front, I think are very important. And so we have to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. There are going to be those pressing things that sometimes we are going to have to step over the boundary. But for the most part, if we have set intentional boundaries where we say, look, these are family times. I mean, I know we're pastors, you know, we're on call quite a bit. But there's still those boundaries that we need to set to be healthy pastors and healthy leaders in that. So intentional boundaries.
And I'll just add this, giving framework for the no. Give a framework for why you're saying no. So a lot of times for us it might be, somebody asked just the other day for it was something great, a new ministry that she's feeling led, a prayer ministry. They're going to start on Monday nights, and she said, and I would love for you to be there. And I'm like, well, I believe in prayer, and does the pastor say no to a night of prayer? But here's what I said. I said, I appreciate that, and I want to affirm that, and I want to help equip you in that. I just can't say yes to anything else right now. And so giving a framework of that, of I value what you're asking me to do. I value that. But right now, I just can't say yes to one more thing. And that's not a great answer because, quite honestly, I live in that same trench with you. Because you feel that pressure of having to say yes. But I've been trying to give a framework when we do say no of why. So that it's not just no, but it's here's why. If I say yes to this, and I've even told people this, if I say yes to this, I'm going to have to say no to my family. And that's just something that I've committed to God that I'm not going to do.
Well, let me add on to this, too, because when I was in college, I was really, right out of college, I was really overwhelmed by a lot of things. And a lot of the reason why I was overwhelmed, because I had this inability to say no to anybody. Like, I just had this inability to say no. And I actually went to a counselor and said, what's my problem? And he said, you don't say no to anything. And I said, but I can't. He said, why can't you? I said, I don't know. And he says, I believe the reason you can't say no is because nobody has ever given you permission to be able to say no. And that very moment, he said, I am giving you permission to say no. I said, okay. He said, now I'm going to give you some homework. For 2 weeks, I want you to say no to everything. He said, so you know you have permission to do that. And I went back, and I lived with six other guys in this house, and it was ridiculous. And I remember I was like by the dishwasher and I was like putting dishes away. And one of my roommates was like, hey, can you throw me a cup so I can get a drink? No. I remember one guy sitting over there on the couch and the remote's right here. And I'm getting ready to leave. And he said, hey, will you throw me the remote? I said, No. So I was saying no to some pretty ridiculous things, and then I had some people like, hey, I need you here at this time to do this, and then back over here for this time to do this. I was like, sorry, no. And so sometimes you just need permission to be able to say no. And so if you need that, I need permission right now to say no.
It's a huge charm.
I think it's important to know, too, that sometimes you don't
want
to professional and spiritual wise, we find this, that if you don't say no and allow somebody else to do it, they will never learn how to do it, and you can help them through it.
Right.
But by saying no, you're almost enabling them to not step up and do whatever it is themselves.
Good.
Because as what we've got to learn in ministry is, if it's important, they will tell you in that voicemail at exposition is important.
Right.
But if it's
right.
dinner time,
you're right.
hit send a voicemail.
You're right.
Because
well,
otherwise, it does interfere with your family life.
And you make a valid point, because we do live in a world that's so different than we did. We got wrapped up. But that, you know, phones and technology, you know, it used to be that you just left a voicemail on an answering machine. You know, and now it's like, you turn it off. You have to turn it off. Turn it off, you know? And so that's another challenge.
Hey, guys, thank you. If you want to hang here for building teams. Did you? Oh, okay. Jeremiah.